passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Long and Winding Royal Road. This is episode number 10, and I'm your host, W.H. Park, and this is our look back at the greatest era of professional wrestling, in my opinion, at least, and that's All Japan Pro Wrestling of the 1990s. And joining me today, special guest, first-time guest on this show, but not our first-time guest of anyone I've talked to. I've talked to this person before. She is one of the busiest and most prolific podcasters, journalists in wrestling right now, and that is Stephanie Chase. Stephanie, how are you today?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy schedule to join me and to talk about 1990s era All Japan Pro Wrestling with me here on LNWRR.
Yeah, it's very odd to be talking to you not about a Jay White match.
I think it's quite refreshing.
Yes, it is. It is quite refreshing. Maybe we'll have less disagreements.
Hopefully. But even if we do have disagreements, I feel it will be still an interesting conversation. And you've been quite busy recently. Like I said in the intro, there you're doing a ton of content. Primarily, I think reviewing for AEW.
Yeah, I'm still doing lots of interviews, but. For Digital Spy, and I put them on my YouTube as well. But a lot of my YouTube content, yeah, it's about AEW. I do a weekly show talking about Dynamite. I do Dynamite previews every week. Sometimes I do pre-shows if it's a big Dynamite. Not long ago, I did like a whole week of content celebrating Revolution. So yeah, I'm deep in the AEW stuff, and just, yeah, becoming someone that knows everything about AEW and spends their days analyzing it and you know, treating it like a wonderful, I don't know, in-depth TV show, which, you know, I think it is.
Well, I mean, you know, following your Twitter, I get the impression like that maybe like, you know, 2021, you know, AEW maybe like to you, what like 1990s All Japan is to me.
Yeah, it could very well be. I think that we are definitely living through a quite brilliant and historic era of wrestling that we'll look back on, you know, very, very fondly, this early years of AEW. It's great. It's great to like watch something so new and young from the beginning and seeing where it's going and just, you know, being in there at the start. It's really exciting. It just makes me feel like a kid again.
So just before we get into the topic at hand, which is All Japan Pro Wrestling, I do want to kind of ask you a quick question, because I do feel like you're probably one of the preeminent experts on AEW. Is that like I'm not a follower of it. It's for a variety of reasons. But my question is for you. No, just like, you know, an objective question is that, you know, like there's all this talk about like they're going to add more content, more hours of broadcast television to the product. And I just think, for a company that's so young and like on fire so much, do you think that's a good idea, or do you think maybe they're, you know, maybe going too running before they can learn to walk, so to speak?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, they have Dark, and people's criticism of Dark is the length of Dark, but that's just on YouTube. And it's certainly not appointment viewing, even for AW fans. And then they added Elevation also on YouTube. And it's not really appointment viewing yet, but it feels like they're weaving some more stuff into it that goes into Dynamite. But adding another show on TNT, like which will happen this year, I think it can be good if it, hopefully it will just be a 1 hour show. I'd maybe liken it to maybe the originally what like Thunder was like before it kind of went off the rails, just like a good side, like main TV show. But I think that, I think, you know, what they're looking for obviously is to break into that mainstream and have everyone know what AEW is, you know, people that don't watch wrestling. And I'm not sure if another wrestling show will help that. I think that the show they just announced with Cody and Brandy, the reality show, is a really good shot at getting, you know, non-wrestling fans or people that have drifted off from wrestling to tune in and see what it's about. And some of the other stuff they're doing, like bringing in Shaq as well. But yeah, I think that as long as they don't do something crazy, which I don't think they will, and make like 12 pay-per-views a year or something like that, I don't think it matters how much kind of actual TV they have, because I think it's well built because they do run so few pay-per-views a year, which I think is the best idea. Because if you look at like WWE, you know, we just had Fastlane for no reason at all. And so as long as they never get into that pattern, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, well, I'm just kind of a curious bystander about AEW. I will say this, mm-hmm. like a Cody Rhodes and a Brandi Rhodes reality TV show, I'm definitely not watching that.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's not for you, but you know, in the sense of if you think, well, maybe we'll get into this show, but you know, Total Bellas and Total Divas, what Total Divas certainly initially did for WWE. I think, you know, Cody and Brandy, they could definitely bring in some different viewers, you know, this idea of this couple of waiting, like expecting their first child and running this business. It's an intriguing premise for one of those reality shows.
Fair enough. But the topic at hand, we're going to talk about All Japan Pro Wrestling from the 1990 era. And specifically, we're going to talk about the year 1995. And, you know, when I reached out to you, Steph, I asked you, are you familiar with this era? And you came back with, no. I said, that's fine. Which is something like I kind of want to do with this podcast, is like kind of not just talk to people who are familiar with the era and love it already, but like talk to people who maybe are going to experience it for the first time. Our episode one featured, you know, Scrump from the PWT cast, and he was not familiar with it. And I thought it was really good. It was really great getting a fresh perspective. And so that's why I, you know, kind of wanted to get you on the show, so like get a fresh perspective on this style of wrestling. And to that end, I decided I'd pick a match with someone you would probably be familiar with, not for his wrestling, but for his being a personality on not only WWE television, but also on the aforementioned reality shows, probably on Total Bellas. I don't know if he's ever been on Total Divas, but that would be John Laurinaitis, aka at this point in 1995, he's famously known as Johnny Ace, and he will be taking on in our match that we will discuss one legendary Kenta Kobashi, the mentor of one of, I believe, your favorite New Japan wrestlers, Kenta.
Yeah, I did not know much at all about this, but I did know Johnny Ace from Total Bellas. And I really want to know if Mama Bella Kathy has seen this match. That's my first question.
You want to know if she's seen the hair in this match, is what you really mean, right?
Yeah, I was shocked at his appearance. He looks like a mix between very early Steve Austin and a Stretch Armstrong doll. It was quite jarring.
I can see the comparison. I don't know if you've seen him during his mullet days with Shane Douglas and the Dynamic Dudes. But this is after that, so he has grown his hair out. So the mullet is pretty much gone. It's kind of like he's kind of a thicker Barry Windham, so to speak, in my opinion.
Yeah, with less like toner on the hair, it's a pretty bold yellow.
I will take your opinion on that because I do not use toner in my hair. So I don't know if you do.
Neither does Johnny Ace.
I'm not casting aspersions on you, like if that's a bad thing or a good thing, using toner in your hair. But yeah, I mean, it's just blonde, I suppose. Is that what you call a dirty blonde, Johnny Ace here?
I would call it a brassy blonde because it's got like too much yellow in it, which, you know, sometimes if I run out of toner shampoo, I can verge on a bit of yellow, but his is very, you know, canary yellow, I thought. But yeah, I know this man as a man who wears a suit and looks very corporate and serious, so just to see him as this blonde man in black trunks was like, whoa, okay. That was Johnny Ace.
That was Johnny Ace. And what about Kenta Kobashi?
He looked fine. He looked nondescript, but he looked so what I'd imagine someone from that era to look like.
Fair enough.
He looked like an All Japan wrestler from the early to mid 90s.
Definitely. He's kind of prototypical of Japanese wrestling, I think, of the era. But this might be one of the few times I get to discuss Johnny Ace on this show. So I thought it'd be a nice little way to kind of do a very, very brief kind of biography of Johnny Ace in All Japan specifically. And so I'm just going to run a bit of background on him. So of course his real name is John Laurinaitis, and he's actually the famous, the brother of the more famous Road Warrior Animal, AKA Joe Laurinaitis. And, I think he got into wrestling via the connection Joe had, obviously as being part of the Road Warriors. He starts his career in the Mid-Atlantic NWA region as primarily as a jobber, losing a lot to people. He goes on his fourth tour for All Japan Pro Wrestling in the late summer of 1988 as a tag team partner of one Z-Man, Tom Zink. And Tom Zink actually has like a bit of a connection to a lot of people in All Japan at this time. He kind of like took Toshiaki Kawada under his wing when Toshiaki Kawada did a excursion over in America. And like his former tag team partner, Rick Martel, had done a lot of wrestling for Giant Baba in All Japan as well. So it's kind of like, I think Zink probably had that kind of connection to Baba to bring in other people into the company. From there, Johnny Ace would start teaming with Danny Spivey, and they would enter the 1988 Real World Tag League. After that, he then starts teaming with a man called the Terminator, real name Mark Laurinaitis, who actually turns out to be his brother, and they team in both America and in Japan. And then in 1989, you'll love this part, Steph. He is paired with one Shane Douglas, and they form the skateboarding duo of the Dynamic Dudes. And for some inexplicable reason, this team is also brought over for a tour of All Japan for wrestling. Well, not inexplicable. Obviously, Johnny Ace has the connection, but I can only imagine when he gets off the plane and shows up at Korakuen Hall and him and Douglas have their skateboards and surfer looks, that Giant Bob is like going, huh, okay, sure.
Yeah, I am familiar with his look during his team with Shane Douglas. And this look here is a welcome departure from that, at least.
So you would take like long haired blonde Johnny Ace over mullet haired Johnny Ace with the skateboard.
I would. I mean, I wouldn't want to take either, but if I had to, I'm not a fan of mullets. So yeah.
What if Jay White suddenly got a mullet? He thought, you know what, a mullet is cool. Would your love for Jay White lessen any?
Oh yeah, a lot. I would think that was a really dumb decision. I know he previously had a bit of a mohawk going on, at the beginning of his career. But a mullet would be too far. That would be too far. I mean, the beard is getting out of hand enough, but if you wanted to add a mullet to that, no. No.
Well, I am happy to hear that your love for the man does have certain limits to it. So that is refreshing to hear.
It has many limits, yes.
I'm glad to hear that. In fact, to Johnny Ace, in 1990, the writing for Johnny Ace in WCW is clear that he's a jobber. So he, you know, wisely, he shifts his allegiance to Giant Baba as he knows that he will get a push in All Japan, and he starts wrestling in Japan exclusively. It's been said that, you know, part of the reason Ace was getting pushes from Giant Baba was because Johnny Ace was the favorite foreign wrestler of Giant Baba's wife, Mrs. Baba, and he was always going to have a good position in the company because of that. So there is something to be said about nepotism in professional wrestling, Stephanie.
Wow. Mrs. Baba has weird taste, for sure. And also, that's kind of funny. It just makes me think, you know, he ends up, you know, marrying the Bella's mom. And I know that she's like probably the same age as him or younger, but it just makes me feel like maybe Johnny is just for the moms.
He could be for the moms, though Mrs. Baba never had kids of her own. Like maybe she adopted Johnny Ace. Maybe she thought, I want this long haired blonde American who's pretty tall to be my surrogate son.
That's really sweet. But it just makes me think of all the foreign wrestlers coming into Japan at this time. Just, I don't know, adopting Johnny Ace just seems weird.
Well, let's see what her other choices would have been. Danny Spivey, no. Dr. Dusty Williams, no. Stan Hansen, definitely not. Giant Kimala 2, probably wouldn't work out there. Gary Albright, no. I think, to be honest, I think Johnny Ace is probably the best choice for her for, you know, adopting a foreign wrestler who was working for her husband at the time.
I guess when you put out the lineup there, if you had to pick someone from the lineup, I guess Johnny Ace seems the most, the easy choice really in the end.
Maybe the most stable choice in the long run too, as
probably.
Well. Yes. From there, Johnny Ace starts teaming with a variety of different partners, including someone who would become kind of a generational peer of sorts for him in one Kenta Kobashi, his opponent in the match that we'll talk about today. They would remain a team. They would team in the 1990 Real World Tag League, and Ace would compete in his first Champion Carnival tournament in 1991. Ace and Kobashi would win their first of two All-Asia Tag Team Championships in a tournament final over the Fantastics on September 7th, 1990 in Fukui. It's after they would also defeat the Can-Am Express of Doug Furness and Dan Crawford for their second reign as All-Asia Champions on July 8th, 1991. It's after this last reign that Ace and Kobashi go their separate ways for several years and are usually on opposite sides of the ring, having a kind of parallel paths of the roster. So I feel like Kenta Kobashi, you know, his rise up the ranks of the Japanese native wrestlers is kind of similar to what like Ace was going through on the foreign side of the roster. You know, like I think he was kind of being groomed to be one of those people that would hopefully take over the position that Stan Hansen had occupied for so many years, because, you know, Hansen was getting older. Also, his body was showing the signs of like working the All Japan style for a minimum of 10 years. And so like they were thinking people like, you know, Steve Williams, Danny Spivey, or Johnny Ace would be like, okay, we got to groom these people. And so we have to give these guys a push as well. So it's really interesting watching the kind of the parallels you can draw with Kobashi and Ace. And we'll talk about those during the course of the match review itself. Kobashi and Ace would later reform their tag team, but they also would include Del Wilkes, the Patriot, in this group, and they would create a faction, Stephanie, of the super creative name of Global Energetic Tough GET.
Wow, he does not get great team names, does he? Global Energetic Tough. It's I feel like energetic's a weird word to put in there, like looking at Kobashi, not saying he's not energetic, but I just can't imagine him getting pumped up with that word.
I don't know who came up with this. I would imagine it was Giant Baba, and he thought, you know what? The Patriot Del Wilkes, what do I think? He's a patriot. He's probably quite energetic about being an American. So maybe that's it. Maybe Johnny Ace is the global part, Kobashi's the tough part, and Del Wilkes, the patriot, is the energetic part because maybe. He's so super gung-ho about being an American.
True. The patriot is definitely not the global part. It makes it even funnier to have a tag team with global in the name and you've got the patriot there.
That's where Johnny Ace comes from. He's the global part of the team, you know. So he's the global element, not Mr. America Del Wilkes, the patriot here. Anyways, the team of Ace and Kobashi would have a lot of success after they reformed. They would become the world tag team champions of All Japan twice. Ace would also win the Wrestling Observer Match of the Year from Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer newsletter with partner Steve Williams in a match against Mitsuhara Misawa and Gene Akiyama that took place on June 7th, 1996. And from there, he would just stay in All Japan as a upper mid-card guy until the NOAH split in 2000, at which time he took off back to America and he became an agent for WCW. And I remember, this is like, you know, the dying days of WCW, but I remember hearing a story from Jeff Merrick where he got a call, I believe, from his friend Lance Storm, who was saying like, yeah, like Johnny Ace is got a brilliant mind for finishes. And that's what time of WCW, like where a lot of the booking was like really terrible, but some of the matches were like really good because the finishes and how they were laid out were really strong and they were reminiscent of kind of a more Japanese feel. And that's been accredited to Johnny Ace working in the WCW office at that time, Steph.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Like that period in WCW right at the end, I've gone back and watched some stuff, but that, like I had switched over by that point. And it seems like, especially with someone like Lance Storm, there was a lot of good stuff going on that was just buried in there that sadly no one was watching or really taking seriously anymore.
So, and then eventually, of course, WCW would be bought out by the Vince McMahon and his family and the WWF, WWE. And then he eventually got hired by the WWF, and he eventually became the head of talent relations, taking over the position from the longtime incumbent in that position, when Jim Ross. And I don't know, like what do you think about his time as head of talent relations? It gets a lot of flack from people, primarily a lot of people who were talents in the company, because they didn't feel he was as good at the job as Jim Ross was.
Yeah, Jim Ross is like a really hard act to follow in that role. And so I do feel sorry for him there. And Jim Ross, was doing this during a better period. But like as a guy, he seems just like really affable or something, like that. I can't imagine, many people, I just can't imagine him like causing many problems, but then I can't imagine him being like super great to talk to either. So it was a hard role for him to be in, though, especially taking over from Ross, but he lasted like a pretty long time there.
Well, I mean, I think one of the big criticisms for Johnny Ace was that, like whereas Jim Ross might've had like the Wrestling Observer, Sports Illustrated as like kind of resources for him to try to recruit people. Apparently, allegedly, the subscriptions that Johnny Ace had for recruiting new talent were like Maxim and FHM at the time. So,
yeah,
and catalogs.
It's funny because to know his career and to know that he did all this stuff in All Japan, It just makes you feel like he'd be different in that role. He'd be more looking for the non-catalog people, like the serious wrestlers or people like, risk takers and stuff like that. So it's funny that when he was handed like a corporate job, he really took it and really immersed himself, in that role.
And obviously from that would launch his real claim to fame, Steph, and that would be becoming the stepfather of the Bella twins, and even more importantly for me, the stepfather-in-law of one Daniel Bryan.
No, it's the Bella twins. They're just great at the people they've brought into their family. You know, at one point you had Total Bellas with Daniel Bryan, John Cena, and John Laurinaitis. So it's just great the people they've been able to bring together. Like, especially just even the fact of Brie being married to Daniel Bryan and then getting Daniel Bryan on a reality show. It's pretty crazy when you think about it. But then he's there alongside John Cena. You know, if you're watching as a fan and you're a real kind of you know, indie lover, like serious wrestler lover, you would have all these almost fantasies in your head about, I bet Daniel Bryan doesn't speak to John Cena. And then you see them like hanging out in Total Divas together. And then you've got John Laurinaitis just there as well. But I've always thought he comes across really well on Total Divas and Total Bellas. And I'd love to know the actual story of, you know, him getting together with Kathy. Like if he told like the Bella twins, hey, I really like your mom. She's single, you know. Like, it's just funny that their mom ends up marrying him.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great impression, by the way, of Johnny Ace. It's very spot on, I feel. Yeah, maybe we need to get the, you know, Total Ace on the E Channel, like, and them recounting. I'm sure there's tons of like cam footage or smartphone footage of them meeting and going on dates and stuff early on in their career. I'm sure a lot of it exists on the Bella's phone, you know, phones as it were. But yeah, but yeah, that's Johnny Ace. That's his kind of like short career bio that we're going to get here on Long and Winding Royal Road. But let's talk about the match, Steph. I ended up picking up this match. It's from May 26th. 1995, it's Kenta Kobashi versus Johnny Ace. And I'm going to tell people something. I'm going to confess, this is my first time watching this match because I personally have never really gone out of my way to watch every Johnny Ace match out there in the ether for All Japan Pro Wrestling. So I thought I'm going to go to a cage match and I'm going to pick the highest rated singles match between these two. And I thought maybe it was going to be a possible triple crown, the title defense from Kobashi against him. Maybe it was something that happened during the Champions Carnival, but no, it's this random match that takes place at the Nakajima Sports Center in Sapporo in the prefecture of Hokkaido. And it's an interesting match to talk about, I feel. So let's start off, Steph. First off, we see that Kobashi's left leg is heavily bandaged. And to me, that's like, you know, that's like a metaphorical Chekhov's gun. At some point, this thing's going to come into play and it's going to factor into the match.
Yeah, it's so, so heavily bandaged and it stands out so much as well. And I like that he had, you know, when he first entered the ring, he's got his ring jacket on. It's like orange and his orange tights, but the jacket has white sleeves and then he's got this big white bandage. So like props to him for totally color coordinating even an injury.
I have to agree with you. He could have gone with the tan, you know, bandages, but he went with the white ones to offset his trademark orange and complement the trim on his ring jacket, which, by the way, Kenta Kobashi had excellent taste in ring jackets. And it's something I'm sure I will talk about when I do the eventual biography show on one Orange Crush Kenta Kobashi. The match starts off with a series of collar and elbow lockups. You know, both men give clean breaks to each other. They're showing that they still have, you know, respect for one another. From there, Ace hits a series of shoulder blocks that hardly faze Kobashi. You know, like he just hits them. It's one of my favorite spots in wrestling is like where neither guy does like a series of shoulder blocks, but they don't budge. There's a boot to the face, doesn't knock him down. But finally, Ace knocks down Kobashi with this really nice looking back elbow, you know, that I'm just like thinking, wow, that's a, you know, Johnny Ace has this kind of reputation, but he is actually a pretty decent wrestler, but he caps it off. He puts the cherry on top there. Stephanie, he says, come on, motherfucker, for added effect. And that come on, motherfucker, just fires up this crowd. This crowd's like now all like, yeah, come on, motherfucker, along in unison with Johnny Ace here.
Yeah, I the last thing I expected was to hear Johnny say motherfucker. really, I feel like that's maybe the only time he said it in his life. But yeah, that definitely gets that crowd going, and they do not let up for the next 30 minutes.
I mean, I think it's like he's very judicious about his use of of swearing in English in, mm-hmm. in Japan. So unlike some people in New Japan Pro Wrestling currently, like he doesn't like you know spam it all the time, so to speak.
Anyways, anyone in particular?
There's a lot. I'm not going to single anyone out. There's quite a few who like to say fuck a lot in New Japan Pro Wrestling in the last 2 years or so, Steph. So I'm not picking on anyone that you love. Don't worry. I'm just saying as a general rule here. Anyways, Kobashi fires back with some chops and hits his jumping shoulder tackle that knocks Ace down. Kobashi tries for a full Nelson or a dragon suplex. I can't figure out which one he's going for, but he can't lock his fingers. Ace switches position, snapmares Kobashi over, and then stiffs him with this fucking kick to the back, to Kobashi's back, that really just pisses him off. He then, Kobashi in retaliation, he gets up, he slaps Ace really hard in the face, does his own snapmare, and then he just stiff kicks him to the back, and now Ace is pissed, and the fans, they're even more fired up, Steph. I thought this was a great exchange.
Yeah, I really like this bit. It's interesting to know the history between these two, because at some points you can't tell whether they're both like, yeah, just lay it in as hard as possible, or rather sometimes they're literally like want to actually hurt each other. But it definitely has a very, very authentic feel, a lot of these, but especially that bit.
There's more back and forth in between Kobashi and Ace in this match, and I gotta give props to the crowd here in Sapporo. They're so into this match, and it's not even the main event or anything. It's just I feel kind of like a random match that these two are having, and I think the crowd just adds to a really positive atmosphere for this show. And it's really nice, going back and seeing when crowds were able to make noise and seeing such a hot crowd for this match, especially in the time we're living in with, the quote unquote clap crowds.
Yeah, it is. The crowd here are not even just, in comparison to what we have today with the clap crowds, but they're just so into this. From the beginning, and like we'll get to other spots later where they react so strongly, and there's a lot of random women screaming for Kobashi at some points as well, and it just made me feel like watching this match, like I felt like I should be more into it, even with knowing things. It was one of those matches where it's good, but I think you had to be there, like not just live, but in the time to really get why people are like reacting so strongly to these two.
Yeah, I think it's, there's something to be said about like, oh, I wish I was there. I feel like I get, mm-hmm. Because like I've watched so many matches from this era via videotape and the streaming and DVD that, I feel like I am there sometimes because like I have such a fondness for the era and for these wrestlers. But I know what you're saying, but like I really feel like the energy from the crowd is like can so for me like seeps through from the screen into like mm-hmm. into where I'm watching it in like my computer room or whatever. From there, both men continue exchanging strikes with one another, chops and headbutts from both until Ace takes Kobashi over with a suplex and then locks in this rear chin lock. Kobashi escapes with a side suplex that sends Johnny Ace to the floor. Kobashi follows him out there and then just batters Johnny Ace around the ring, including hitting this really nasty looking leg drop across Ace's back as he's draped over the ring bearer. You got to keep in mind that I think Kobashi's like probably like 250, 260 pounds. And all that weight's just coming down across like while John Ace is kind of like, his neck and his chest are like on the cross the metal guard railing like that. That's got to suck. I don't know. Like, these guys take a lot of like dangerous moves, but things like that are probably just painful, not necessarily dangerous, but just painful to take.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff looks painful that Kobashi does. Like he is a big guy that like lays it in hard, but especially that. Yeah. But I think, you know, Johnny is a big guy too, so he could probably take it. But it's funny nowadays, like the guys that like really, you know, lay it hard, like your Ishii and Suzuki are kind of smaller in stature than these are, just look really like two big, hard giants, you know, really giving it to each other.
I mean, if you wanna see a nice comparison, I do suggest trying to find the Kenta Kobashi Minoru Suzuki match in Pro Wrestling Noah that they have against each other. I think I think Suzuki's a lot bigger than a lot of people actually imagine. Like he's not Kenta Kobashi size, but he's not a small dude either, in my opinion. I've seen him like in person many, many times, including like being near the merch desk and All Japan at a New Japan show. Back to the match, Kobashi continues getting the heat on Johnny Ace, including putting him in the abdominal stretch. The action spills back to the outside again, where Kobashi is about to deliver a suplex to the hard floor. But Ace, you know, he saves himself with a DDT, but then Kobashi, you know, recovers and is still able to hit Ace with a side suplex on the thin matted floor. And I gotta say that it probably sucks to be Johnny Ace right now, because those mats are not thick. It'd be like getting like side suplex onto a concrete floor with like a rug underneath or a rug above it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, those mats were not thick at all. They were so thin. It must have sucked for both of them just landing on that.
While Kobashi has been pretty much dominating Johnny Ace in this match and beating him pretty badly for the most part, there are points where Ace gets to fire back. He gets his hope spots. And then, you know, Ace finally, this is where the Chekhov's gun comes into place. You know, Steph, he hits that bandage leg with a drop kick that sends Kobashi crashing to the mat in pain. And I'm like, that's for me. This is where the match just takes it up to another gear. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this bit was the first kind of really exciting bit of the match, because he really just, you know, winds up and fires up like a little like Duracell bunny going at him. But then it's like he has such a light bulb moment that we can all see. It's like he finally realizes, oh, the leg, that's what I have to do. Because he's had some spots, but he's really like, he's not gonna outslap Kobashi. So just like that moment that he has where he realizes, yeah, the leg, that's what I have to go for. And it's as if the crowd as well are like, oh no, he realized the leg. Like he finally saw the heavily bandaged leg.
Well, I kind of feel their reaction is of like one of shock and even a bit of anger that he did this, mm-hmm. because I do think there is something to be said about like sportsmanship in Japanese wrestling, that, you know, you see a lot, it's played out a little bit more than you have in other styles of wrestling in other countries. So like that he would go after this injured body part is kind of like dishonorable, I suppose, not really sportsmanlike. But at the same time, to me, it's like, well, it's wrestling. Hey, you know, it's like you just put a big target on your leg there. It'd be foolish not to go. But I do think the idea is that Ace, you know, didn't want to have to go to, you know, attacking the leg. Like he wanted to try to beat Kobashi as kind of on equal footing, no pun intended. And then, you know, he's like, fuck it, I can't beat him, so I'm gonna go after that leg. So, and then he does, and from this point, like he's just his game plan, attack that leg, two more drop kicks to the leg for good measure. Ace smells blood in the water. He's now in control of this match. There's a pin attempt after a top, top back elbow from the top rope, which only yields a two count. From there, like just Johnny Ace just goes all like super aggro on the leg. And this really, I love this part because the crowd just fucking boos him. And I'm just like, he didn't use a chair, Steph. He didn't hit anyone in the nuts. There's no fucking midget manager out there, like, you know, getting heat on himself instead of on the match. This is just like good old school. Like, I'm an asshole and I'm going to get heat that way instead of being a dickhead, you know, rule breaker.
Yeah, he's really getting good heat here with, as you said, like not having to do anything illegal or really dodgy. But I mean, that's as well. Kobashi is obviously such a seems like such a loved baby face to the crowd. So it's kind of a good mix of a baby face that the crowd, like a tough baby face that the crowd have sympathy for as well. And this big foreigner as well, heel, just doing the dirty trick of going after his injured leg.
Ace continues to go for pin attempts, and then there's another kick out from Kobashi. And this leads to Johnny Ace putting the stretch muffler on Kenta Kobashi. And I feel like, you know, he's not really going for a submission necessarily. He's not really a submission wrestler. But instead, I think what he wants to do, because all his, you know, anything he does is really focused on leg. I think what he wants to do is try to weaken Kobashi's leg to the point that Kobashi can't kick out anymore of any more pin attempts. And I think this is just a really sound strategy, and it really goes to show, like, maybe this is the mind of the guy who would, you know, later join WCW as an agent and was the guy being lauded for, like, wow, this guy really knows how to put together a match and put together like some good psychology that where things make sense.
Yeah, definitely, like the psychology of going after the leg but not in a submission way and making sure he can't kick out, especially with someone that seems as tough as Kobashi. It's a very sound strategy. And if this was Johnny Ace's idea, then yeah, I can see why he has a reputation of having a mind for these good finishes.
However, you know, for on Kobashi's and the continual assault on his leg only serves to piss him off until finally he retires with some chops and then hits a big lariat to take Johnny Ace down. Kobashi tries for a sleeper hold, but Ace hits a jawbreaker, but Kobashi again gets pissed off. And I'm certain, I swear to God, Steph, I think he legit chops him in the fucking ear.
Yeah, I thought so too. That looked sore, and I think, yeah, he genuinely just whacked him across the ear there.
Now, I have never checked. I wonder if Johnny Ace has cauliflower ears.
I'm sure he does.
Well, next time he's on, I think he's on WF television or Raw again. I'm not going to watch it, but you know, maybe next time, Way reviews Total Bellas, I'll ask him, hey, just check if he's got cauliflower ears. Maybe Kobashi gave him cauliflower ears. Who knows? with these chops to the ears. Anyways, Kobashi continues his, kind of rallying against Ace. He hits a leg drop on Ace again while his throat lies across the middle rope. So he's kind of like weakening the neck and chest area with these kinds of leg drop moves while Johnny Ace is like draped across something. I think the idea is he wants to finish him off with one of his lariats, which is like one of his big finishers. At one point, this is really great, Johnny Ace teases suplexing Kobashi over the top rope onto the floor. Thankfully, he doesn't succeed, but he does hit the Ace Crusher over the top rope. Yeah, the move he invented in All Japan Pro Wrestling, and that would inspire many other moves, Stephanie, including the Diamond Cutter, the Stone Cold Stunner, the RKO, among so many other moves in wrestling. Johnny Ace was the pioneer of this type of move.
Yeah, that moment was wild, like how the crowd reacted to it. It was just crazy, like how much they were invested in that, and then him doing it over, doing it over the rope like that, and yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's amazing, like, you know, considering where we are in, 2021 with wrestling and kind of like the kinds of spots we do end up seeing, like that something as simple as a suplex over the top rope onto the floor, which, you know, would be super dangerous in of itself, but it seems kind of almost pedestrian compared to some of the other things you will regularly see on weekly television sometimes. But that this just garners like the reaction.
Yeah, and I was just gonna say, like, it's him, doing that, and it being leading to like Diamond Cutters and Stunner, and I just remembered like listening to Orton on Austin's show the other day saying that it was Laurinaitis that like told him to do the RKO, and he's more influential than people give him credit for.
Oh, definitely. I think, maybe for Orton, it was like, oh, you're going to give me like the permission to use the variation of your move. I mean, the stunner and the diamond cutter, the RKO, are variations of the Ace Crusher. It's not exactly the Ace Crusher, but that's mm-hmm. the origin point of a lot of these moves for sure. From here, you know, Johnny Ace hits a missile dropkick, which I was really impressed with. That this man is pretty agile for a guy his size.
Me too. When he pulled that out of the bag, I was like, whoa, okay. I did not expect that coming from Johnny. It's just because of his size, the way he moved. Like, I didn't expect him to execute that.
I think the hair added some aerodynamics to the move.
Yes.
he goes for a cover. 1, 2, Kobashi kicks out and the crowd starts chanting Kobashi, Kobashi, Kobashi. They're super into this match. Every time Kobashi kicks out of Ace's pin attempts, the crowd just starts stomping their feet, which is like one of my favorite sounds in wrestling. Not like chants or anything like that, but just that people just stomping their feet. And I have had the pleasure of doing that in Cork and Hall myself. And it's just it's like it's a really good sign that the crowd is like even more into a match than they normally would be, because like they've gone, I feel stomping your feet is that extra step.
Yeah, definitely. The feet stomp noise is so much better than some of like the random chanting that you can get. The feet stomp noise, it not only like shows enthusiasm, but it's like building anticipation as well. And it just fits in very well with the match. So it provides a very good soundtrack to it.
From here, Ace blocks a German suplex attempt and then hits another Ace Crusher on Kobashi. He then slams Kobashi and signals for the moonsault step. And this is, you know, this is Kobashi's own finisher, like that he would only bust out at for like, you know, his toughest opponents like Misawa and Kawada and the such. And this is feels just like, you know, Ace is going to go for this move, Kobashi's own move. He's basically spitting in Kobashi's face and he hits it. He gets to hit it clean on Kobashi. There's a 1 and a 2 and Kobashi kicks out and the crowd, they're going crazy at this point. This has turned into really a well built out, you know, methodical match at the beginning. It got more dramatic in the middle and now we're in the crescendo of the match, Steph. And my God, these guys are just pulling everything out and this crowd is just totally into it.
Yeah. As much as I didn't expect the drop kick, I did not expect the moonsault from Johnny Ace. He looked gigantic flying through the air like that. Like very, very well done. Props to him. But yeah, he couldn't have done more to rile up this crowd. Like it gets so intense as we go into that final stretch. And I think him then pulling out Kobashi's own move just really, really added to it. And just made the crowd hit him a little bit more.
From here, Ace hits a kind of, I guess, kind of like, you know, Billy Gunn's famouser move. It has mm-hmm. the same kind of mechanics. And then he goes for a pin, but Kobashi kicks out at 2. Ace goes for the Dr. Baum power bomb, but Kobashi shifts his weight midway through and lands on top of Johnny Ace for a 2 count of his own. Kobashi blocks a kick to the face. He slaps Ace and then hits a spinning chop to the back of Ace's head and then hits a tiger suplex on Ace. And again, sucks to be Johnny Ace in this match because my God, that sequence, like the chop to the head, I don't know if that's worse than getting hit with the tiger suplex.
I think the chop to the head is worse. Yeah, the chop to the head looked like it would be worse for sure.
Kobashi tries for his own moonsault press, but you know, Ace, fortunately for him, catches him on the middle rope and delivers yet another dropkick to the bad leg. Very smart man, this Johnny Ace. The crowd is booing this. This truly has some great heel work without, like I said, there's no cheat tactics in this. It's just like super aggression and like unsportsmanlike behavior, but without cheating, I feel.
Yeah, it's not cheating. That's probably what the frustrating thing is for the crowd that wants so badly for Kobashi to win, because they're thinking like he's doing this terrible unsportsmanlike thing, but it's not against the rules. So there's nothing that can be done. They just have to watch their hero take this punishment on his poor bandaged up leg.
So Kobashi hits a big folding powerbomb on Ace, but you know, Ace is able to escape. He then hits another powerbomb, but he can't pin him. And it's at this point, Steph, that the announcer announces that there's 1 minute left in the match. And I think that call really, you know, first of all, they're having a great match. And this part of the match is just like so dramatic with like all these near falls. But like now the crowd's like, oh my God, there's a minute left. What's going to happen? I think just adds even more drama and more heat to what's happening in the building.
Yeah, absolutely. Even I was getting on the edge of my seat there when they called like, one minute left. And yeah, this crowd, like if you thought they were hot before, now even more so, just knowing like the time is running out here for Kobashi.
There's 30 seconds left. Kobashi is able to hit another moonsault and he connects with Ace, but the impact of that moonsault landing on the mat hurts Kobashi's injured leg enough that it delays him from covering Ace for a second. But that second is enough for Ace to recover, enough to kick out at two. And then right after that, Steph, the bell rings and we have gotten to a 30-minute time limit draw. And I just thought that finish for a 30-minute draw, that finish was absolutely brilliant because everything that happened before played into like there not being a winner for this match.
Yeah, it was such an excellent finish because, you know, Johnny Ace had been working on this leg the whole match. And then in the end, it's not the injuring his leg that gets him the win, but it prevents Kobashi from getting the win. So his plan kind of 90% worked because he didn't get the win himself, but it was a very, very clever finish. And I did not expect it to go to a draw, and a draw is not something that you see much nowadays, but yeah, I didn't expect it to end like that. And when it ended, it was so just sudden as well that, yeah, it was one of those matches where I think once you see the end, then you realize how good it all was, you know, as a complete story.
I think one of the things that I take away from this match, and if you're, you know, able to look, you know, in hindsight at the careers both guys had, especially with Johnny Ace and All Japan, is like, I think this match was like one of those things that was designed for the, you know, for the company to position Ace as his equal, as Kobashi's equal. You know, obviously it's very clear that Kobashi is going to become one of the big stars of the company, you know, a couple of years down the line. And like, I think the idea is that, you know, Johnny Ace is going to be his rival as far as a foreign wrestler goes. And maybe Johnny Ace is being groomed to be the next Stan Hansen of the company. That obviously never happens. Like Johnny Ace never wins a triple crown. Johnny Ace never becomes a main eventer in the company. He's always been more of a tag team wrestler and kind of, but he had a nice solid career doing the, you know, working the upper mid card of the company and kind of being like, kind of like go-to, you know, Gaijin wrestler in All Japan at the time next to Stan Hansen. So I can't imagine he'd have too much to complain about in regards to his career in All Japan Pro Wrestling at that time.
No, it doesn't sound like it. Like it sounds like he did very well for himself. You know, not everyone could be the top guy, but he did very well for himself before becoming the John Laurinaitis that we all know and love now.
That's right. I mean, I wonder if, like, you know, noted All Japan 90s Mark CM Punk thinks back, like, thinks I'm feuding on television with Johnny Ace, one of the top gaijins of All Japan Pro Wrestling, of an era of Japanese wrestling that I love. I wonder if he ever thought that when they were like doing the program on television between the two. I doubt it. I don't think he.
I think.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think he probably thought like Johnny Ace, you fucking sellout. Like you were this, you know, wrestler in All Japan, you're getting in there with Kobashi and now you're a fucking stooge who's picking out, you know, models to bring to WWE, whatever Vince McMahon wants. He probably just thought like, man, you were, you know, cause going to Japan, I think at any time though, as a gaijin wrestler, it is kind of a bit like, it's a bit of a risk, like, you know, edgier thing to do with your career. It makes you seem a bit more serious as a wrestler, you know, someone like more serious about your craft. But then it's just funny that he came back to the States and suited up and became John Laurinaitis. So yeah, I think CM Punk probably had like a genuine feeling of like, you suck, man, towards him.
I would think that maybe he appreciated him more as a wrestler than he did as a executive in the company that he worked for. But, you know, I don't know, like, I'd imagine Johnny Ace, if anyone said you're a sellout for doing this, he'd probably like, I didn't sell out. Hey, I bought in, you know? It's just always the best line to come up with, like, the accusations of like, being a sellout, especially in wrestling. I don't feel there's anything wrong with, quote unquote, selling out. I think of it more of as buying in, like, hey, you got a limited shelf life for your career. Get as much money as you can and try to be happy about it. But, like, if you're not happy, but you end up having a lot of money, that's up to you for your career. You know, like, you would hope, you know, a wrestler, especially when you like, has both a career that they like and get a lot of money doing that career. But sometimes it doesn't happen, Steph. But that's, you know, that's the way wrestling goes, I feel.
I think there's, like, I have no problem with the selling out. But there's, like, the actual, you know, act of like selling out or whatever, you know, that you can do, like taking the Stanford job. And then there's, like, mentally selling out. I think that CM Punk, who, you know, sold out himself in a way, would be more mad at, like, Johnny, his maybe idea that Johnny, like, mentally sold out and is now, like, no longer that All Japan guy. He is the talent scout of Max
magazine, you know. FHM, yeah, the magazine, yeah, subscriber, yeah. There you go. But overall, like, your thoughts on this match, Steph?
Well, I thought I would have shaved a couple of minutes off it, but then when I got to the end, I thought, no, you can't shave a couple of minutes off it because it's a time limit draw, so that wasn't going to happen. But overall, I thought the match, once, I think the crowd certainly added to it so much, and watching it, it made you feel, for me that didn't know anything going into it, like, I wish I knew their full story more before watching it, because obviously if you did, you would be more invested because the crowd was so invested. But I thought once I got through the full match the first time and saw the finish, it did make me appreciate the match as a whole, and as a story a lot more. So watching it then the second time, I liked it a lot more, because then there was a lot more, you know, stuff to look out for, I felt, with, you know, Johnny working on the leg and Kobashi, him trying to take the neck, and then the moonsault and everything. So all in all, I'd say it was a really good match. And Johnny Ace pleasantly surprised me as not only a worker, but as an absolute heat magnet of a man.
Definitely in this match. Maybe, like, do you feel like you would, like, if you have the free time, I know you're very, very busy, but, like, you know, randomly just, you know, oh, I'm bored. What am I going to, I want to watch something. Oh, I'm going to watch something from All Japan in the 1990s on YouTube. Is that something that you feel like could possibly happen if you have some free time?
It could possibly happen. Right now I'm doing that with war wrestling and romance matches, you know, trying to watch as many of them as I can. With All Japan, I'd need someone to draw me in. And unfortunately, it's not going to be Johnny Ace. And I don't think it's going to be Kobashi either. So maybe if you sent me like a picture book of the roster,
I could
see.
Maybe a young young Jun Akiyama, maybe Misawa. Like, unfortunately, there are no men that look like Jay White in the company at that time. But you don't like. I mean, you like other types of wrestlers, like, you like Ishii a lot, you know, you like Minoru Suzuki. So
no, I was gonna actually say, like, I do not need someone that looks like Jay White like at all in life, but to watch wrestling, no. But I mean, I need, like, there are people like Minoru Suzuki that has a charisma about them that draws you in, that you know, I didn't feel from Johnny's or Kobashi.
I think you would probably get into Kobashi a lot more with like some of his like more famous matches against like the you know, guys like Misawa and Kawada. I definitely think you would probably like Toshiaki Kawada a lot, because I think he has like an amazing subtle charisma to his style of wrestling. So maybe I will send you some links to some classic Kobashi, and maybe I'll send you a match of Kobashi versus Kawada, and you'll get back to me in the DMs about what you think about that. But I'm glad that you ended up liking this match. I pleasantly surprised that I liked this match as much as I did. I always thought that, okay, my first time watching it, I will probably like it, because Kenta Kobashi is one of my favorites of all time. And I think Johnny Ace is very underrated as a foreign wrestler in All Japan at that time. But I was surprised at how much I ended up liking it, because I just thought the looking back after the finish has happened, like, wow, everything made sense. And like you, my second viewing of the match, when I was taking notes for it, I thought, okay, oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. That makes sense. This is just really well laid out logical pro wrestling, which is something I'm always looking for. So like my highest recommendation to people, go watch this. It's kind of a hidden gem for me to recommend to people out there. And Steph, thank you so much again for taking the time out to not only watch this match, but to come on the show with me. I know you are super busy and I appreciate it. I always enjoy talking with you, and I try to look for excuses to talk about you. Maybe the next time we'll talk about more modern wrestling, but if people want to find more of your work, where can people find you?
Oh, they can find me on Twitter at Stephanie MTS, and on YouTube at Stephanie TS Wrestling. I'm very close to my 1,000 subscribers goal that I'll celebrate with a live party. So, you know, every little helps on that front.
Go subscribe to her YouTube channel. There's a lot of great content. I say this not as someone who is having you on the show, but like someone who, like, you know, will go to your YouTube channel, like, oh, who did she talk to this week? Oh, wow, that's great. That's, you have like a wide range of different guests from different companies and different parts of professional wrestling on the show. So I do recommend people who like watching interviews with wrestlers, check it out. Steph's a really great interviewer as well. And you can find me at WH Park 9. You can find most of my work over at postwrestling.com. And I'm sure, Steph, you know, maybe I'm thinking there's another project we can do later this year. You know, kind of hearkening back to something we did before. People can guess maybe what that is, but I'll talk about with you at a future time when it gets closer to that. So anyways, thank you so much, Steph. Thank you all listeners for supporting this show and enjoying the look back at one of my favorite periods of professional wrestling. And until the next show, until the next time, I will say goodbye.